buddy, buddy, but. Hello and welcome to episode 34, that's 30 plus 4 of the Dead Idea of a Hala podcast. It's a variety podcast. I'm Gary Butterfield and I'm talking about the podcast and performing the podcast, recording the podcast in my room after work Thursday. I feel like I have a fever coming, I'm starting to sweat unduly despite the lack of heat. One clarification about last episode. You know, I talked about not wanting to give to people on the street and clipboarders and stuff. Just for my own peace of mind, wanted to also mention that I do give to things. I don't have any problem giving my money. I think it has to do with my time and being interrupted while I'm heading to places. You know, people say time is money, and I say that time is, you know, so much more valuable than money. That's a terrible statement. It's really about my own neuroses with time. I have given money to Planned Parenthood because I don't want girls getting pregnant. Yeah, so I want to talk about two bands I hate. The first band I want to talk about is the Wallflowers. Yep, you remember the Wallflowers, that limp, alternative rock, easy rock band from the 90s that was so widely be tolerated. There are a couple reasons why I hate this band. I think that the moment, you know, they put out their One Headlight single, and, you know, One Headlight, you know, that wasn't enough to make me hate them. I did hate it, but it wasn't, you know, not any more than I hated, say, like, Power Man 5000's singles at the time. One of the differences with the Wallflowers is that Jacob Dylan, the main character of the Wallflowers' journey, he oftentimes, you know, did interviews and he used to talk about how, you know, he wanted to differentiate himself from his dad. His dad is Bob Dylan, you know, the creator of The Hurricane and Highway 61 Revisits, The Blonde. I'm not the biggest Bob Dylan fan in the world. I respect him more than I like listening to him. But Jacob Dylan, oftentimes in interviews, would talk about how he didn't want to be compared to his father. And that is horseshit. You know, because I know, and many people also know, you know, my not being a fan, and I even know this, Bob Dylan's real name is Robert Zimmerman. So if you don't want to be compared to your father, don't take his fake last name. You know, Jacob Zimmerman probably would not have gotten famous or gotten a record deal based on the Wallflowers. So, you know, that's, you really do want to be compared to your father, and you do want to use that. So don't hide under that skirt, you piece of shit. But the defining moment that really led me to hating them was an old MTV show called Making the Video. And if you remember the summer blockbuster of 1995 or whatever year it was, the remake of Godzilla starring Matthew Broderick, you know, it took over the theaters and the Metroplexes, and everyone loved it as the best reviewed, you know, worst reviewed movie of all time. It featured the mini Godzillas, huge hit, clogged the toy store shelves, generally a piece of shit movie. And the Wallflowers recorded a cover of David Bowie's Heroes for the soundtrack that was ubiquitous at the time. You could not go anywhere without hearing this cover of Heroes. I love David Bowie. He's a really original musician. He's got a really unique voice, both literally and, you know, kind of personality-wise. Huge innovator. Big influence on me. I love David Bowie. And it's not, I don't hate them because they did a cover of Heroes. You know, doing a really bland cover. And it was a really bland cover. I mean, they didn't add anything to it. You know, it just, hey, people are ready to hear Heroes again. You know, but doing a bland cover is not an unforgivable sin for me. You know, the AV Club, which is the Onion's review site I really like, they did a thing called Undercover where all these bands would pick songs and do covers. And Ted Leo did the first one. Ted Leo did a cover of Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And it's blander than bland. I mean, it redefines the word bland. He just kind of, you know, Ted Leo is kind of this weird King, reverse King Midas, where like everything he touches turns into wet white bread. You know, but that was enough. You know, I think Ted Leo writes bad songs, so I don't really like listening to him. But I don't hate him. You know, I'm just kind of can safely ignore him. I can go through my day without even thinking about Ted Leo. But the thing about this Wallflowers cover that made it so important to me is, you know, so they show the video, and the video is the Wallflowers playing Heroes in a, like, a hotel room in New York while Godzilla attacks the city. And Godzilla's smashing and bashing and crushing and rushing and just kind of knocking down buildings left and right. And the Wallflowers are not impressed. They don't even look out the window, and they just play their songs. And the interview, Jacob Dylan is like, "We wanted to, you know, show that the Wallflowers are unstoppable. You know, even if Godzilla attacks the city, we're not going to stop rocking." And, you know, that is just this arrogant piece of shit fucking statement. You know, like, when are you going to start rocking, you middle of the road, you know, college frat rock, you know, pieces of garbage. You know, so go back, learn how to write a fucking song, and then, you know, talk about how you guys could fight Godzilla. Pieces of fucking garbage. Secondly, the second band I want to talk about that I hate, which I definitely have a little bit more respect for. You know, I recognize this as a more unique musician, but that would be Andrew Bird. Some of you may not be familiar with him. He is a, you know, kind of an effete little imp, indie rock guy. He's a professional whistler. He plays violin on every album. He's very soft. You know, he's kind of like, his music is, you know, a stiff breeze would knock it over. He's kind of like a homunculus created out of Wes Anderson's, you know, blood queefs that just kind of coalesced into this music force. So kind of the first thing, you know, just listening to the music, I don't like his songs very much. There's nothing to grab onto. I can't remember any of them after hearing them. You know, there's no like ugliness in it. You know, he doesn't appreciate contrast at all. You know, there's no light and dark. It's just kind of this, everything is so soft and pretty, you know, and ethereal that, you know, it loses all meaning. You know, even so, Sufjan Stevens is a little indie folkster who, you know, could also be said to have coalesced from Wes Anderson's blood queefs. And I like Wes Anderson too. You know, just because I think that he's a soft little blood queef man does not mean that, you know, I think that his movies aren't good. But, so Sufjan Stevens, you know, is kind of similar, but even he has a song, you know, that has some kind of balls to it. Like, he, you know, has a wide texture palette of sounds. You know, he has songs that sometimes have some kind of distortion and sometimes have, you know, different kind of noises. Whereas it just feels like, you know, Andrew Bird's songs are just, you know, a length of silk being pulled out of your ass. You know, and it might feel okay, but there's nothing to grab onto, you know. But really what ultimately made me truly hate him, you know, move from just kind of dismissive to hate with him, I was stuck in Ogilvy Transportation. You trade your trans for your tations there. A transportation center in Chicago, Illinois. And I missed a train, and the next train wasn't for like an hour and a half. So I had an hour and a half to wait, picked up a copy of The Onion, read The AV Club as aforementioned. Love The AV Club. So they're interviewing Andrew Bird. I had heard of him before, and I was already pretty skeptical. You know, my wife's a big fan. I have lots of friends who like this guy. And, you know, the press picture is him inside with an umbrella, and he's wearing, you know, a suit vest and a striped shirt, and he's looking at the camera all shocked, and, you know, of course, okay, so that's what happens in this kind of indie rock, you know, whatever. But he had this statement that he made, and I'll read it for you, that I think is the douchiest, kind of emptiest statement that I've read a musician say. And this is a quote. They're talking about his songwriting process. And Andrew Bird says, "That's my number one rule. If something gets under my own skin and keeps reoccurring, it starts to take on a certain weight and value, and I think, I have to put this in the song. I have no choice but to mention Greek Cypriots in the song. It's a little internal challenge to myself. Like creating little imaginary rituals in yourself to help the song go from non-existing to existing. I don't get particularly precious about things like this, though." So, and then he goes on to talk about how, you know, he doesn't mind changing his songs, you know, if the record people need a hookier single, you know, because he gets to play with it. That's fine. I don't even mind him talking about, you know, if something gets under his skin and is there, he wants to write about it. I think that describes just about everybody who writes songs. It's a little pretentious that he singles out the Greek Cypriots, you know, which is a really obscure reference, and this is the one he chooses to bring up. You know, that kind of speaks of, you know, who he is, you know, and that he keeps a dictionary by his bed. But the real problem I have with this is that line about creating little imaginary rituals in yourself to help a song go from non-existing to existing. What does that mean, Andrew Bird? You know, is that... Did you just use, you know, 16 words to say songwriting? You know, what's an imaginary little ritual? What the fuck does that mean? Why do you say, help a song go from non-existing to existing? You know, what the... Like, it just... That empty language really bothers me. And I don't like the word pretentious. I feel like that word is misused. But in the literal sense of putting on pretenses, this is putting on pretenses. This is somebody going out of their way to appear self-important and literary and well-read. And it, you know, literally stopped me in my tracks when I read this. I was just pretty amazed that something this douchey would come out of a human. You know, and I hate this, like, empty language thing that happens now, or that I notice now that I'm a curmudgeon-y asshole. You know, it's like when someone calls you a hater. Like, what the fuck does that mean? You know, like, you hate. Well, you know, hate things that are bad, love things that are good. You know, if you really don't like something. You know, saying something as a hater is just, it's a non-statement. Oh, you're just being a hater. That doesn't mean anything. It just means I disagree with you. Why is it okay to dismiss somebody that easily? Like, I don't want to have this conversation, you're just a hater. Well, that's fine. Just say you don't want to have the conversation, you know, or you don't want to talk about it. You know, it doesn't mean anything, like a hater. That phrase, you know, just kind of drives me nuts. Kind of just a side note, you know, one of the greatest achievements in empty language I've ever heard. My friend Brayton Cameron of the Dino Pitch fame told me a story about him and a bunch of his friends who stopped off at this, like, tourist trap. And there was some kind of weird old crocodile wrangler or some shit like that. I don't remember the details. But the guy says this. He says, there's only two things I hate, and both of them are dying twice. And I love how deceptively, you know, that statement sounds like it means something and then doesn't. You know, when I had my run-in with the Slender Man, and he talked about, you know, the books he's reading and the calendar he's coming up with, and he said, you know, make your to-do list into a today list. You know, it doesn't mean anything. Like, it's just a weird, meaningless statement. There's kind of tons of, like, just inspirational sayings like that just fucking piss me off. It's not enough. It's not concrete enough to even exist. It might as well just blow away. Like Andrew Bird's music. That's called a segue. It's kind of like a re-segue. I'm getting back. So kind of, you know, that's all I really wanted to say. Just articulate why I hated these two bands. It's been a long time since I just fucking curmudgeoned out. I'm fucking curmudgeoned out. If you like those bands, I don't think you're stupid. I don't judge you. I do think that they're bad. You know, kind of this is more about their bad personalities. I think they're kind of douchebags. Musically, you know, one of them is Non-Fat Ice Milk. And one of them is a hollowed out, unflavored Funyun. But, you know, whatever, if that's what you like.
Stay, do I work? The thing she burns and burns away, the way she always returns too late. Burns away what doesn't work, what should not stay. Do I work?
Can we move to the moon? If you ask, I'll say I'm fine. Cosmic entities of yours are cosmic entities of mine.
Solar, bombast.
just not pretty. It doesn't hurt.
Hello, I'm Maverick Beacon, documentary filmist and environmentalist, with the Sustainability Report. It's a vague word and a vague report for a Bahahendrandandrandandrahenenhenen podcast about sustainability, recycling, rebicycling. Here to talk to you about fully reusable computers, canvas swag bags, sustainable e-business, and hope-based vegan shadows. This podcast is the source for freegan lunch patties, essential salt-free gluten traps. It's time to rebarter the rain traps and type 2 plasticize the cousin hug reserves. It's time for the Sustainability Report. Lend. Today I'm joined by a mystical creature known as the Morlax. Stumbled across this magical imp while power-pedaling up Mount Krilboscrape in beautiful downtown Drahan. He's got fur in his heart and tiny gloves, and he's here to talk to me about sustainability. Welcome to the show, Morlax.
Being here is nice, I must admit, a comfortable chair upon I sit.
Oh, well, thanks. Only the best, you know. That chair is made out of recycled vaginal band-aids from the All-Girls Summer Fun Camp out here on Lake Drahan.
The seat is soft upon my rump, a band-aid stump next to a hump-a-lump-a-pump. Now I'm here to share my thoughts about ideas that are sold and bought.
Go on, sounds very interesting.
About recycling paper, there is no need. Any fool can see that we can make more trees, so throw it away and throw it throughout, with grumbles and hickeycocks and sump-pumps about.
Ooh, that's a terrible message, Morlax.
Shut your mouth if you know best. Who's the host and who's the guest?
All right, this is highly unusual, but go on.
Only the first bite of a banana is sweet. Take the first bite and throw the rest on the street.
That does not sound sustainable.
If only each chip were individually packaged, only then would we have truly fresh snackage. Another thing, a thought, a sound to peruse. Why upon the homeless do we waste good shoes?
Wait, what?
The feet change, shift, harden and blacken. The natural hooves are quite crack-a-lackin'.
Whoa now, whoa. You don't want homeless people to have shoes.
Clean your ears if they're that dirty. I feel those shoes should go to more worthy.
I cannot get on board with this. First, it's not sustainable. Second, it's just cruel.
Call me cruel once you've seen what I've seen. A tour in Vietnam would wipe your mind clean.
You were in Nam.
My stare no less than 100 yards. I saw men use baby skin playing cards.
That sounds terrible, and we sustainably respect your sacrifice.
You don't know the half of it. Now about trees, I'll lay some knowledge that'll bring you to your knees.
Okay, go on.
When people talk about litter, they implicate men, but the worst offenders are the tree ants. They throw the leaves, the sticks, and the bark, and the dust upon the ground with every gust. Chop them, burn them, make them pay. When you think on it, it's the only way.
Huh.
They're almost as bad, I must say, as my nemesis, my annoying roommate.
You have a roommate?
Ah, oh, yes, oh God, he is here, hear his wings, I will. Get ready to be annoyed, he is such a pill.
Hi, I'm Black History Moth.
Black History Moth?
African American surgeon Charles Aldrew is often credited with the invention of the first large scale blood bank.
Hmm, well, how'd you guys meet?
Craigslist? Legs missed?
Dr. Maluna Karenga created the African American holiday Kwanzaa in 1966.
Okay, does Black History Month share your controversial stances?
What he does with his time, I cannot care less. He, the moth, keeps his cards close to his chest.
Aren't you guys friends at all?
We have dietary differences. He only eats bicycle parts, and I love bikes. They're graded for spinny webs.
No, how it does make me fetter, the way he only eats Cosby sweaters.
But I'm wearing a Cosby sweater. Oh, God! He's eating my sweater!
He invented a fire escape ladder in 1878.
Oh, my nipples are exposed.
Ah, a nip, a slip, some nude man delight. My bike parts with sauce I will dine tonight.
What do you mean by sauce?
Nipple sauce I speak, and nipple sauce I sup. I shall cut off your nips, and nip off with my cup. Then pestle and mortar I'll grind into paste. That hairy man nips provide the best taste.
No, no, God! Ah, ow!
Yes.
Help!
Yes,
help.
Yes, rhymes with yes.
God!
Alexander Miles of Duluth, Minnesota, patented an electric elevator in 1887 with automatic doors that would close off the shaftway, thus make an elevator safer.
So that's it for today for episode 34 of Dead Idea Valhalla. A short, little, compact, little episode. I just wanted to ask everybody, if you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes. Please tell your friends about it. I seem to have lost some listeners. It's a hard thing to admit as a podcaster, but people don't seem to be downloading the show very much this month. So maybe that's a sign. You know, maybe this idea is close to have run its course. Maybe I'll just call it with two seasons. Move on to something else. I don't know. But if you do like the show, let me know. Please do those things to support it. Thank you.